We are WNST Towson, Baltimore. Hey, I'm 1570. This is the point. If we're doing like videos, you say click on me, subscribe here, do all that. Set us on your dial at AM 1570. Lots and lots of folks are. By the end of the month, we have a whole new set of modern research about what a great 6 month period it's been for our writing, for our audience, Luke Jones and all the work he's doing. We're getting ready for a baseball season, getting ready for a football season. And I'm sort of back on track after a couple of Super Bowl. And what we did at Crab Cake Row, we did 78 charities. It kind of shut it down a little bit in February. I'm ramping it back up. And first things first, today when we're recording, this is the first recording on my father's 105th birthday. So I've re-released our book from 2006 on my family's love of baseball and why we love baseball. I've re-released the Peter Principles in recent weeks. We're going to be getting back out on to the Crab Cake Tour early April. Lucas and I are making a little Florida because I got to go sun myself. I mean, we got new ownership. I got champagne on ice. The Maryland Lottery will send me out doing the Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Coco's in early April, but we're going to be every Friday at Fadley's when there's a home game. Luke's going to come down from 2 until 5. And for all of you who used to call and say, hey, you ain't on live no more. When are you going on live? I'll be on live from 2 to 5. Live from 2 to 5. It rhymes. It's pretty good. It'll all be brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Also, Win Donation 86690Nation. Our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare and our newest sponsor, Liberty Pure Solutions. Keeping my water clean. I've known Doug a long time. Well water, all that good stuff. This guy I've waited a long time to have on. He was the first text that I sent out on that evening when I was preparing for yoga and licking my purple wounds less than 48 hours after the Ravens were eliminated in a home AFC Championship game. And I always pronounce his name wrong, but Orand, John Orand. Did I get it right? Not
perfect,
Orand.
Nestor. Perfect.
You know, I've known you for 30 years, and I want to make you French. You know what I mean? Like, I want to give you the Parisian Orand. But nonetheless, you are now with Puck. You're a longtime sports business journal and literally world-renowned media insider who sits with commissioners. But you're like, at heart, one of us. You're a Baltimore fan. You're a Baltimore Orioles fan. You're a Washington sports fan. You're a corridor. You're a home team sports guy from back in the day. And you've gone on to like break stories and have news. And sort of famously, Mark Viviano through Bob Leffler got word of Art Modell moving the team here in 1995. I still give Viv 2 points for that. I told everybody Brian Billick was getting the job here. I broke that one. So, you know, you get stories, and we just lost Chris Mortensen this week and famous for the Peyton Manning story to Denver. But in Baltimore, dude, I'm not wearing a hat, but it would be ornithologically correct if I wore. I would tip my cap to you to say congratulations on breaking the story of the century in this century in Baltimore on the sale of the Orioles. Congratulations, brother.
Thank you, man. Let me tell you about that. I grew up in DC, so I've adopted Baltimore, but I'm a DC guy through and through. We never had a baseball team, so I grew up with the Orioles of the 70s and the early 80s.
How old are you, man? Were you at 71? I have no Senator memories. Now, I remember the 73 season. I remember Pete Rose, Harrelson, Felix Mion, like Rusty Staub. And I mean, I remember that vividly. I was 5 in 73, but I have no recollection of anything other than the Texas Rangers and 1971 baseball cards with the black edges that said Senators with Hondo on it and Ted Williams, you know?
I'm told, my parents tell me, I went to the final game at RFK. That was
Awesome, dude.
A 9-0 loss because the game was a forfeit because the fans stormed the field and they couldn't complete the game at the end. So I think
Phil Wood's been so pissed for 50 years. You know what I mean? Like I spent so much time in that press box as a kid at the Capitol Center in the 80s. And I'm writing about that in that beautiful book that Krulik did. I got to get him on the show about the Capitol Center and its history. But I was always amongst you. You know what I mean? Folks like you that lost your baseball team, sort of my age. Hey, man, you were amongst me. I lost my football team twice now, if you consider that I'm going to watch my Caucasian
employee. You guys never adopted the Redskins. Like we went to Baltimore immediately. I love the Orioles, man.
It was easy to do when Palmer's on the hill and Eddie's coming and here's Cal and there's Weaver and there's playoff runs and you could go beat Reggie Jackson up if you tried and free agency and all of that. But what made you an Orioles fan?
We went up to watch the games and my first memory of going to Memorial Stadium, was a Sunday afternoon game. I think it was McGregor on the mound. It might have been Flanagan. It was one of the left-handers, and it was the year after Reggie Jackson left to go to the Yankees. And the Yankees.
That would be 77 then.
And okay. My dad taught me how to boo, like, and with like 50,000 other people, like we just every time he came up, we just stood up and we booed the hell out of him, and it was great.
Yeah, I loved Reggie until he did that. And then, you know, then I met Reggie and I really didn't like Reggie. That's chapter six of my book this week. John, you're at Puck now. Before we get to the Orioles thing, because I'm going to take a deep dive with you, man. I've waited a month and a half to have you. I've watched you on all these other podcasts and I'm like, mine will be better when he comes here. There'll be more information. I mean, Rubenstein's walking around stadiums now. He was at Sarasota. Then he's a kid. Like, this is happening. Pinch me. This is like literally happening, right?
Yeah, it's not only is it happening, Major League Baseball can't wait for it to happen. So they've at the home office up in New York, they've put this thing on the fast track. So there's not going to be a lengthy sort of let's make sure that Rubenstein is okay to take it over. It's like let's get him in and let's shore up one of what baseball considers a crown jewel franchise for the league. You know, attendance hasn't been great. The record has been terrible recently, but Camden Yards is among the best venues to watch a game, and just the long history of Baltimore and the latent support that's there. I mean, I haven't seen a ton of it recently with the half empty stadiums, but the support they feel that the support is still there. So it's a very important franchise for Major League Baseball to sort of. I don't want to say get up and running again, but to sort of just to give it some TLC to nurture it a little bit better than it has been over the past 20 years.
Well, John, that's where I'd really push back. If you were the commissioner and I were full of piss and vinegar, and I am, because I've witnessed this and I've been thrown out and I've had my name denigrated. And like, I mean, Buck Showalter's wife said they came up to her on day one and told her I was a bad guy. Like, this isn't, you know, like, it's insane, right? So, I mean, I have a personal thing and an Aparicio thing with all of it. But, like, I hear all of that now after, you know, the patient's been abused for 30 years to say we really cared a lot. And she was really pretty when she was younger. Like, what? They didn't do anything to, they didn't do anything to try to, I don't know what you could do. You own the sport. Like, yeah, you're in charge.
You know how hard it is to move out an owner. I mean, look at like in the NBA, like Sterling and with the Clippers, it took among the most racist rants in order to get him from owning the team.
Oh, you're in DC, dude. That football guy, that creep down there.
How long did it take the NFL, the powerful NFL, when all the owners wanted him out, but all the other owners were worried about precedent? Wow, if we get that guy out, what's in my closet that's going to get me out a couple of years down the road? So you know with the Angelos family here, and especially when John took over, he just was at odds with Major League Baseball. He's at odds with the commissioner's office, and there's no mechanism in place to say like we don't like you, you can't own that team. They're already in the club owning that team, so they had to do certain things. When was the last time that we Baltimore had the All-Star game?
93.
That was 30 years ago, for goodness sakes. There aren't 30 teams in Major League Baseball, and so Baltimore was supposed to have it. And
it was always a chip to end the Masson dispute that lingered to literally to Peter's grave, right? Like to the end of the whole operation, the whole fight has been about that money and Peter believing in his soul. And I wrote this in Peter Principles, it was told to me by multiple people. You know, Joe Foss said to me over coffee about 10 years ago when I was writing this book, he said to me, they thought Peter was going to be fair. Peter was never going to be fair. You know, Peter had no interest in being fair. It was over his dead body that they were ever going to put a team in DC. And if they did, they were going to pay for the rest of his life for it. And they kind of did, right? I mean, yeah, and the interesting thing is, what happened to all that money? You know, like,
let me defend Peter for a quick second here.
Sure.
I next time you go to an Orioles game, I do this all the time. In the 90s, it was all Virginia plates, DC plates. Whenever I go to a game now, you never see a Virginia plate. My car is the only car with a DC plate.
Because you
on
have
it.
A team. that won the World Series. Why would you come here? Why would anyone who was in Bowie, who was 14 years old 20 years ago, who's 34 now, why in the world would you be an Orioles fan? Literally.
That would have been Peter's argument. We're a crown jewel franchise, you say, and then you're going to take – we have the Phillies to the north. And
well,
then
that's
you're
not defending Peter. That's defending truth. That's not Peter. That the truth is, if you put a team in D.C., it was going to split the region. Like Peter said that to me at the barn in 97 after the third high ball, and like, it'll never work. It'll be like the Bay Area. I have his real thoughts when he was coaching and in charge, 2 hours of it, on every issue out loud. Some of it was outrageous, but his whole thought was, you'll kill it just like you kill the Bay Area. We can't support two teams. That was his premise. But in the end, the greatest thing, this is the part of the Peter principles, the greatest thing that ever happened to him, because he could have never fixed it here. He didn't know how to fix it. He didn't know how to be nice to people. The best thing that ever happened is they paid him to do nothing. Like the last 18 years, they've just had money falling off a truck for the Masson deal, right? I mean, but they didn't have to do anything. And the dirtiest part of the Masson deal, and I want to get to the future because I really do want to hear how you'd fix it, because we're all in agreement, it could be a lot better, you know? I mean, not the team on the field, but everything else about it could be a lot better, including the city. But the poison pill in that deal that was such an insult to Baltimore and to any Oriole fan was the less you spend on media for your own team, the less you'll have to give the Nationals. And at the crux, it's a greed deal. All of it was a greed deal to say, how can we artificially suppress what Masson is giving to two teams because we have to give them the same thing? So if we give ourselves $60 million a year, we have to give them $60 million a year. So let's call it $29 million. Like it was a shell game with money, and it's never been reported as such, John. And that's what it was. I sat here and watched it as they cried small market, small payroll, all of those things.
It's tough to argue. It is something that there's no easy way to unwind Masson right now, other than the fact that if you step away from the DC Baltimore area, and you look at the media market as a whole, regional sports networks right now, Nestor, are in crisis.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, they smelled all that Yes money 20 years ago, and they cashed it for a while. And maybe the buck run and a little bit of money they spent in that period of time, you know, was the benefit. But 20 years later, like, it's a different world, and they can't figure out how to get me to be able to watch the game on the way to Ocean City on my phone on a Friday night driving to the beach. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, and so down in D.C., we have Ted Leonsis, who owns, of course, the Wizards, Capitals, and Mystics, he bought the regional sports network, NBC Sports Washington, from Comcast NBC, renamed it Monumental Sports Network. And so in terms of unwinding Masson, you have Ted Leonsis that has winter programming dying for summer programming, dying for Washington DC programming. You know, could he come in and sort of take over the Nationals' rights? You know, that's something that's sitting right there waiting for it. The problem with that is that Ted had wanted to buy the Orioles. Ted also has been in, you know, kicking the tires on the Nationals. The Orioles now have been sold to Rubenstein. The Nationals are off the market now. And so how interested is Ted in getting in with baseball if it doesn't include some sort of ownership stake in one of the teams?
Well, what's going to happen with the Nationals? I mean, what's the big look, we could talk a lot of moving parts. First, a puck. I want to hear about puck because, like, I saw John.
By the way, we're such Oriole fans. We can't wait to get into the Oriole fans.
Yeah, but what is puck? Because I keep seeing puck and I think hockey, but it's not hockey at all. Right?
It's not hockey. No, puck is it's an online newsletter that it's described to me as the Vanity Fair of online news. It's big in Hollywood. So if you're interested in Hollywood news and gossip, they have a lot of people that report on that. It's big in Washington, D.C. It's big in politics. So it has a lot of well-known political writers that write about it. it's big in the fashion world. They have a fashion vertical. So you
are the sports business vertical of that, correct?
I know. If you know me, you know that I'm not a fashionista, Nestor. But I like it's amazing type stories that are similar to sports business stories. And they hired me about 5-6 weeks ago to create a sports business vertical. And so I've been writing about MLB Pantsgate, we call it, the see-through pants that Nike's created for this season. We're writing about the RSN issues, writing about the NFL getting mad at everybody. So it's been a lot of fun so far, but it's online, puck.news, if you want to take a look at it.
If I were to champion your cause in that space, in the media space there, I would say the largeness of sports at this point, and what I've seen over 32 years, completely from the inside, right? Like totally on the inside of baseball for 20 years until the billionaire threw me out, completely on the inside of football, every owner's meetings, all these, until I got thrown out. They're throwing us out. They're putting Peacocks up. They're making you, they're charging you for playoff games now, essentially, to get on a service. Amazon is now in on that. The bundling and cable, the unhooking of all of that is all over with, and it's sports hasn't figured it out any more than you and me and our business of the media and newspapers and periodicals and paywalls and the banner up here figuring it out. Sports is the next thing to say, how do we just wake up with $300 million coming off the public teat off of cable television? I mean, sports been stealing money for a long time, and now it's $17 beers and I don't. Did you catch that Ravens press conference? What they're doing with the $600 million that they're doing a club level and they're building? They had some smarmy guy in a suit, and this is another press conference that I was not allowed to ask questions at. He said, "We all know the beer's colder inside the perimeter, and the hot dogs taste just a little better inside the perimeter." And we've just given $1.2 billion of state money to these two facilities to grow things. And for Rubenstein and for all of them, I keep asking, what's the big idea? What's the Gateway Arch? What's the London Eye? What's the thing other than the game and the stadium, which is now 30 years old here? That's the problem here. But the media problem for Sinclair and the RSNs and anybody that's investing in this, Ted Leonsis, is to say, all right, it's not going to be cable. You're going to make me pay my $6.95 a month for my Disney, my Hulu, whatever those streaming things are. Sports hasn't figured this out yet, and that's why you're really on the cutting edge of all of this, I think, reporting on it, because there's a lot of speculation and a lot of opinions about how it's going, but nobody knows how this is going to go and whether people are really going to pay. Like, baseball needs to figure out a model where they get my money once and get me to the stadium and get me a discount here and I get all the games. And I'm not bitching and complaining about, I got Amazon on Friday night, Prime on Saturday night, Hulu on Sunday. Like, that model's not going to work for consumers, I don't believe, any more than the paywall model is working for newspapers and periodicals.
No, there's utter chaos in the marketplace right now. And that makes my beat, and that makes what I write about a lot of fun. The idea is, like, you could not have come up with a better business plan for sports than the pay TV business plan. So I use this example a lot, but like in DC, when I walk my dog, I'm walking down the street and, I'm looking at, I can see the TVs in my neighbor's homes. I'm the only one on my street watching the Orioles, but all of them are paying in to help feed my addiction to watch the Orioles, because the Orioles gets paid per cable TV subscriber, not per watcher.
Let's go back to the turn of the century where this was before the Nationals. This was Delaware, West Virginia, Virginia. I would go down to North Carolina and they had home team sports on in Nag's Head when I was young, chasing girls. Southern Pennsylvania, district. I mean, it was 6-7 states all just funneling money, a couple bucks a month, right? Toward, mm-hmm. We have to have baseball on. We have to have the Orioles on, right?
Right. And so what's happened is that if you think about the way that you personally watch entertainment shows, when was the last time you sat down and watched an entertainment show on a broadcast TV or cable channel and had to sit through commercials? The people that are not sports fans have cut the cord and they've already migrated to Netflix, Apple TV Plus, Amazon Prime. As a result, Masson and ESPN and all these other cable channels are getting less money because the number of cable TV subscribers have dropped by 30 million in the last like 7 or 8 years. And
the attrition will only continue. It'll never grow again.
Everybody's wondering where the bottom's going to be. So is the bottom going to be zero, or is the bottom going to be like people like you and me, like this is one way to spend some money and see everything that we kind of need to see.
Yeah, I'm not Netflixy, Spotify-ish, Apple this, you know, Google that. I mean, like a couple of them nip at me for a couple bucks a month to have an email account, but like my wife pays the cable bill and we got it and the Orioles will be on. And I know if you Comcast, this has been an argument in LA that you've been covering for 15 years where I can't watch the Dodgers. This has been an argument in New York for a long time about what do I have to buy to get the Yankees if I care enough about the Yankees to watch 50, 60 games a year, or if I'm a shut-in, which feels like baseball really specializes in, as I'm learning. Like, no, I mean, you laugh, but I went out to those games in September when there were 20,000 people there and they had a 15-game lead and they were just cruising. They were win 94, 98. And I saw the people that were out there and there were lonely people keeping score who the Orioles are their life. And I really gained a new respect for that through a friend of mine who's had some health issues, that the Orioles are everything to her and she's getting older. And I respect what sports has always done. I'm wondering what it's going to do in the future, because John, this is where we get to the good part. By the way, John Orand, I want to get it right, from Puck. He is a Baltimorean sort of kind of by adoption. He's an Oriole guy. He's the one who broke the story about David Rubenstein. So please follow him if you want good stuff all along the way. You want to learn, you want to get smarter. We talk about intelligent conversation here. This has been my premise in the beginning, and I'm talking to a lot of people this week and this month about it, and just sort of like, all right, let's say David Rubenstein takes a shine to me and says, I like that Aparicio kid. He fought with the old man here. He fought for justice. I'm going to call him. I'm going to talk to him. We're going to do it off the record. We'll go get a crab cake someplace quiet. And he'd say to me, how can I fix this? And I'd say, let me think about that. You know, that's a future column for me, for you, for everyone. And I was asking John this, which is like, you know, asking a rock, right? I'm still waiting to see the books get open from last year. What's the big idea? You know what I mean? Like, winning baseball games is good, right? And gambling. I mean, you know, I mean, hey, it's Gambling Awareness Month here, and I'll continue to say 1-800 gambler to everybody. But that's where they think the profit center is going. I can't think they think it's in $17 beers after $12 beers, or that people will one day pay $50 to sit in the bleachers and they'll pay $300 to sit behind home plate. The revenue is one thing, but the interest level to get you in the car an hour away and bring your kids, your grandkids up here, what are they going to find when they get there that's going to be worth what it costs? And I'm finding this with concerts that are $300, $400, $500 now, where I got some jack wagon throwing up on me and screaming during ballads at Toto concerts. I mean, I just think the entertainment experience of what old guys like us expected at a ball game on 33rd Street and peanuts and a beer, and what they think this is going to be and where the audience is and where the price point is. I see them doing $12 tickets. We used to say you can go to a ball game for the price of a movie back in the day, or you're for the price of roller skating. It's a cheap night out to go to 33rd Street. It's why my family could afford it, because we could go a lot and it wasn't a lot of money. Hockey's never been that way, right? You know what I mean? There's certain sport, football's always been a little bit more, but baseball was always there. What's the big idea for you? If David sits with you and says, how can I fix this? Cable television, stuff that's sort of out of the pay grade of all of this. How can you make the experience something that's the centerpiece of the city, the way St. Louis, Fenway Park, the places that do it well, Wrigley, the places that do it well, where it's just 30,000 people every day, all the time, a way of life, and people feel aligned with it again after 30 years of maybe not so much, if you were thinking about it much.
Yeah, Mark Cuban sold his stake in the Mavericks in the NBA, and somebody on Twitter asked him, like, why did you do that? And his answer was he knows about media. I've been covering Mark for a quarter century. He started broadcast.com. He launched HD, HDNet, the TV service. He knows about media.
Axis, like, by the way, which I love.
And he says that it's changing. It's now about real estate and entertainment, and it's not about media rights anymore. And so the big growth areas are in those areas. And if you look at in Atlanta in particular, you know, they've moved the team out of the city, and they created a big sort of entertainment complex with hotels and restaurants. It sounds a lot like a city, doesn't it, Esther? But it's almost
like a spring training town. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? They've taken Baseball City from 40 years ago, and they planted it in for our purposes, Owings Mills. Like literally, I said, if Owings Mills Mall, when they got rid of it out there, if they would have moved the Orioles there and built hotels and movie theaters around it, that is exactly what Atlanta did.
And so you look here in my hometown in D.C., Ted Leonsis wants to take the Wizards, the Caps and the Mystics out of D.C., out of Chinatown, and move them across the river and into Virginia, where he can own more of that land and create his own sort of like restaurants and have more of a relationship with those areas, the restaurants, the hotels. Now restaurants pop up and Ted can't tax those restaurants for his fans going to those restaurants.
I always said the thing that Angelos hates the most about Oriole baseball is driving up and seeing the crowd of pickles.
I bet.
That's a fact. Everything they've done with that deck in center field was to steal the people from pickles, like literally.
Ted Leonsis would say the same thing. So I'm not answering your question by saying what do I think he should do. I'm answering your question to how Rubenstein is viewing this, which is he wants to create an environment at Camden Yards that takes that pickles crowd and brings it over to, you know, the parking lots or to, you know, to.
But in Baltimore, you can do that, but you can't charge $15 for a beer and think that's going to happen. This Baltimore, right. Dude, come on now. I mean, you've been at DC a lot. You smell the difference from here to there, right? I mean, like, no offense. I'm a Dundalk redneck. You know what I mean? Like, come on now. I mean,
listen,
there's a price point here.
I still have my
here.
Ticket stubs from the bleachers at Memorial Stadium.
There's a price point issue here. There really is. There's a price point issue here in a town where it appeals to blue collar, if there's anything such as that left, and working man, if there's anything such as that left that I know about. But the people I know, and I've done this my whole life, and I, you know, I am the art. I mean, the reason Angelos hated me so much is because I was the complaint department. I opened the phone lines every day and said, did you see a rat at the game? Is a hot dogs cold or warm? Was the beer good? Was he like, they never answered any of that. And my thing for Rubenstein is, all right, it's depressed as it is, but the team's really good. But I saw the team was really good last year, and I saw where the ceiling for that is, 28,000 out there to celebrate the first, you know, champagne bath in a long, long time. And there is much more growth possible, but at what price point and at what entry point and how frequent do you want to go down there? And the Orange Club and the Silver Club and, you know, come to the ballpark and walk around every night for free if you want. We have plenty of room. Just buy the $12 beers. And I don't know where that it's a broken model. I don't know what it is. It is in concerts too. I mean, John, there's a lot of concerts. Don't tell anybody this, but if you wait to the last minute, tickets are $5 because the place is empty and they just need you there to drink the beer and make the toilets flush. And I'm seeing a little bit of that with baseball on Tuesday nights where it's like, hey, come on out and walk around, buy the $99 a month pass. If you live in the neighborhood, walk. I mean, which, great for me when I live downtown, I would have loved to have done that. But they're changing their model in a lot of ways. Like they're trying. I went to a Christmas in July 2 years ago, John, you know what I mean? The caravans, there's stuff that they've been doing. I don't know that any of it's really worked though here yet.
No, ultimately what works is getting a good team. The way attendance typically works is this will be the season. Like I bet you won't see the 25,000. We've been terrible forever. So once you see this start to go, then I use the we there, Nestor. I always say it's the Orioles.
I don't call the Orioles we because I haven't been treated like a human in so long that I don't remember the last time I went down there and had anybody who was nice to me, anybody, anybody. And I mean, I'm talking about since before my marriage. I mean, I'm talking about last century. So I am really looking forward to whatever. I am open-hearted about all of this, and we, and I've got a closet. My last name's Aparicio, dude. I come at this pretty honest. But I am wondering what their ideas, and I've also asked this, and just sort of in a, not a rhetorical way, but just in a broader way. When do you know it's changed? You know what I mean? Like, there'll be a press conference and all that, but what will be the signs other than Kevin Brown not being intimidated about calling balls and strikes, and, you know, maybe the broadcast become a little less servant, you know, master to the king and fealty and like all of that. But I'm wondering, when will somebody like me come back and feel like, oh my God, it's changed, and I want to be a part of this? Because I, John, you know, I want to be a we, you know, but they have to make me a we. They really do.
Yeah, I think with every team, in every league, in every market, what makes people come back is if you win, and they have a good young core that's going to be around for a while. And do you want to be a part of that? Like, do you want to be a part of what I feel like is going to be like a dynastic Houston Astros type situation? Like, I want to be in on the ground floor of that. So it's I ultimately, regardless of how much you charge or what kind of entertainment you put around the stadium, that team better be good, and it better be players that I want to see.
Well, but it can't be good forever. And that was my point when I went on the radio 30 years ago, when it went from bad to good to really bad to awful to when will it ever be good again? And even when it got good with Buck, to your point, all the Virginia plates and the DC, they stopped coming. So it became even more important.
Because like Buck was like Buck was great, but Buck was a flash in the pan. And so when the Orioles got me, was like Eddie Murray and Flanagan and McGregor and Palmer, and they were great. My son was born in 1999. He grew up an Oriole fan. He didn't see an above 500 team until he was like 12. You need to be good for a sustained time to get people to live through those tough times.
Well, these are the good times. I mean, John, there's no doubt about them being really good this year and what they can do. And we can talk outfield and, you know, what are they going to do with Kowser and what are they going to do with Holiday and how they're going to get him here and like all of that. I for me, the bigger picture is how this will change as a business, how the perception of it, how they'll sell things, how it'll feel to go down to the ballpark, because the uniforms are going to be the same. And the players, the first thing I would say they're going to do is put some money into Henderson or put some money into Rutschman or try to do both to sort of deliver that promise you talk of, which is we're good for the next 5 years. Like we're going to throw $250 million down right now.
One of those two, just get them long-term. Totally. Yeah.
Well, that would be the real commitment. John Orand is here. He is from Puck, formerly a Sports Business Journal. Just to wrap things up, your hopes for them and what you hope to see when you get up here. And what do we need to know about Rubenstein as well? I mean, you've clearly researched this and you stuck your neck out on the line saying this was going to happen, and it's happening.
It happened. By the way, that was great. I got that out plenty early. It took the Sun and the Banner several hours to match that reporting. So I was feeling pretty good about that.
You in about 20 minutes. It happened to me at about 6 o'clock at night. Three people hit me. I said, well, if you're reporting it, I mean, you're Mr. Oriole, you're connected, you're in DC. He's a DC guy. I was not going to dispute it. I retweeted you. And then about 20 minutes later, I made three calls to three Mr. Bigs inside. And they're all like, this is really happening. And I'm like, how did we go from like December 14th, where this wasn't like, it felt like it was going to be the World War II, you know, after Peter, it just felt like the kid was going to dig in and mom was going to dig in. And we could go through all the lawsuit, like just how awful the end has been for all of it. But I really do want to focus on what this guy's going to do. I mean, do you have any inkling of what have you talked to him at all? Or did you just break the story and not even talk to him?
They were surprised when they found out about the story. But when you did, Nestor.
Oh, so they're pissed at you. Okay. All right. Gotcha.
Loose lips sink ships, Nestor. So here's the thing about him is he's a local guy. I think he lives in suburban DC now, but he's very proud of his Baltimore roots. He's older. And I mentioned that only because like this is not like a young person that's coming in to try to make an investment and make money. This is a guy that will want to win. And he will want to do what he will want his legacy to be, having brought a World Series title to the city, or contributing to that. So my expectation is that he is going to be an owner that is going to put his money where his mouth is, and he's going to do what he can to lock down a couple of the high priced free agents that aren't coming up for several years, but if you're an Orioles fan over the last quarter century, you're already getting a little bit nervous about that. And you ask like, what am I looking for? You know, it's not even attendance levels. It's just a general excitement in the crowd. I mean, the excitement of the mid 90s, not even the Adam Jones and Buck Showalter sort of created that. I don't think.
Were you at opening day the night Pedro pitched on Sunday Night Baseball? 01, 02, 03, one of those years where there were 50,000 people yelling, "Who's your daddy?" at Pedro Martinez as he walked off. The Orioles beat his ass that night, chased him out of the game early on a cold opening day night. It was a football crowd. You know what I mean? Like, literally, I remember being in the stadium. It was more than 20 years ago now, right? It was Pedro. But it was an opening night, Sunday night baseball game. The Orioles were still relevant enough, and the Red Sox were coming. And I remember that thing. Delman Young, you know, everybody has that moment of that. But I remember a football atmosphere. And that's something that if I were to write a book about it here, the football baseball thing's a little fractured here. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the same fans. It's not. You know, there's definitely an overlap for sure. I mean, it's not silly to say that. But I grew up Colts and Orioles equal. All, you know, Bert and Brooks, there was room for both of them for me, and Eddie and all of that. He was even room for Art Schleister for a minute or two. But I think that is something. Look, man, the worst thing Angelos did here, aside from everything, was chasing the football team out of here when they won the Super Bowl. You know, making Joe Flacco and the team go out to Denver, get their ass kicked to open the season, instead of having that celebration and hanging the banner and the rings and all that stuff in the stadium. You know, there's a fracturing of the two. I would love to see the football crowd come to baseball games and make it raucous, make it really uncomfortable for other teams to come in. It's not an uncomfortable place for a visiting player yet. That happens, then you got something. To your point, when it's can't wait to get down to the ballpark and we're going to rain hell on the Royals tonight. Like, I don't know that baseball lends itself to that. It doesn't Yankee Stadium, though, on a good night, you know.
There are areas. Camden Yards is such a great park. Visiting fans, they circle it and they want to come down to it, and that's been its reputation for a long time. But I do remember some of those crowds in the early to mid 90s. You know, that was even with us Chardonnay drinking Washingtonians up there.
Hating on the Yankees in the midnight when we had Davey and the Yankees were Jeffrey marrying us. I mean, come on, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a long time ago, though. John Arand is at Puck. You can follow him. He covers all things business and sports and RSNs and all the questions about what happens next. Dude, you're in the hot seat. I'll look forward to your next breaking news and piece. So when do you expect this to happen? Can this really happen by opening it? Because, I mean, you're saying that. People are saying that. You know, Evan Drellick's writing that. Like, what?
I've seen those reports. I'd be really surprised by opening day, but in the weeks after. This is on the fast track. I mean, I know, like, you feel like like somebody that's been in prison for forever. It is happening.
It's funny you'd say that, because I went to Drug City the day after you broke the story. And I was in there on a cold night in January, and I'm not a big champagne drinker, but we celebrate with champagne, even though your name is not Oran. We celebrate here with champagne in America, right? And so I don't really want that. I'm like, I'm going to get a really nice bottle of red wine that I can't afford, because I like red wine, but I don't spend $60 on bottles of red wine. So I'm like, I'm going to do that. I have a bottle of The Prisoner. And the night that it happens, you know, and thinking I might actually get my press credential back, which would mean a lot to me and my family and my, I think it would mean a lot to my audience, quite frankly, that I'm going to open that prisoner and let the release the prisoner on that night. So you'd say, you, I feel like I've been in prison. I do. I really do. And I appreciate you saying that. And I'm really looking forward to having you at Fadley's and doing live radio and doing like I used to do at Hooters and having Brooks Robinson stop by. Like I miss all of that. I bought in on downtown. I lived downtown for 20 years for all of that. I see, you see the sunshine coming up over my shoulder here, John. Come on, man. Come on. It's a new day of Oriole magic, brother.
Yeah. Fadley's one of my two perfect crab cake scores is
perfect.
Fadley's.
What's the other perfect you gave?
Oh, Coco's.
That's fine too. They're both sponsors. See,
That made me go.
Perfect. Well, they both were on a cup of Super Bowl. I was
by the way, Costas Inn is way up there. It was way up there.
I'm having lunch today at Costas with the great Ray Bachman, my longtime producer. So I will, I'll make you jelly. What do you get when you're at Costas? You just get a crab cake?
Do the crab cake. And, you know, even though I was there when Thursday Night Football came through, and so I took an out-of-towner to get crabs, even though they were from, I think they were from the Gulf.
Okay. Well, it happens in the winter. We can't pull them out of our own bay.
Yeah. But they were still great. You know, you throw the seasoning on there. I don't think they use Old Bay. What do they use there? JL?
So here's what I want you to do. It's a little homework for your media guy. You get YouTube where you live. Go to Costas and put Vice Network, the Vice Network that's sort of falling apart that I love so much. They came in and did a piece on Costas, a 10-minute like on the story of Costas, and it's beautiful. Mr. Costas came here with $5 in his pocket from Greece in the 1960s and built this business and owns racehorses. And served my father beer and crabs and shrimp in the 70s when he got off of work at the point. So go check that out. Every Fadley's and every Coco's and every Costas, there's just a beautiful story. And that's what the crab cake tour is about. So I'm hoping to get you out. I'll get your proper crab cake. Listen, if you're coming to Fadley's, you've gone to sleep on a shrimp salad. You've gone to sleep on a mac and cheese because they're world class. So we'll get you to the new Lexington Market sometime in April. Hey, man, congrats again. Great work. Old school journalism, breaking stories, pissing me off because I didn't get it first, making me work at 6 o'clock at night on a Tuesday when I'm going to yoga, making me verify your work when I – like if you reported its truth, just like me, if I reported its truth, right? So I really appreciate your hard work on this and pissing off Rubenstein before he even gets in.
I appreciate you, Nestor. Thanks for having me on, man.
Get my press pass back. What do you think? 50-50? What do you think?
I think it should. I'll give it a 50-50. I'm not ready to predict that. I'm not ready to predict.
All right. Well, he looks like such a nice man. He looks like Steve Martin. He looks congenial. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, praying for a new day of Oriole baseball. It's right around the corner. Stay with us.